The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So before we begin, I want to express my gratitude to Reverend Master Chiyu, who is no longer with us in body, but is certainly here in spirit. I think I've learned more from her since she died than I did when she was alive. And certainly without her, I wouldn't be here. And also to thank Reverend Master Mayon for inviting me to offer a few words of Dharma. And to thank all the monks and laity all these past years for helping me look at all my messy spots and get to the point where I might think, well, maybe before I die, a little of my karma will be cleaned up. And most of all, I want to thank all of you for spending your weekend with us. And what a wonderful weekend to come, the Festival of the Buddha's Birth. And not that this particular day on the 9th of April is the day he was born. That's not really important. What's important is that we celebrate his birth and that we recognize that indeed we are celebrating our birthday too, because we are the Buddha. The Buddha nature is within us. This is what we strive for. So we can congratulate each other on this day and on our birthday. Now the question is, what do you do after that, right? What do you do after that? I want to talk a little bit about ceremonies, particularly the ceremony of daily life. And you can't start with a better place than the Festival of the Buddha's Birth, because we had bright thoughts, bright words, bright music, and hopefully you can take some of that with you, regardless of where you're going to go. When I was thinking about ceremonies, I thought, well, you know, ceremonies are part of our culture, right? This particular ceremony and Buddhist ceremonies may not be part of our Western American culture, but certainly ceremonies are part of our culture. You know, we have weddings with baby showers, and we have graduations. We have a birth. And there's a birth certificate coming down through life. We have death, and there's a death certificate. So really, what we have is a lot of ceremonies from the very first one, our birth, to the very last one, our death. So then the question is, you have these two certificates on each end, right? When we're born and when we die. So what do we do with our life in between those two certificates, in between those two bookends? Well, we can learn a lot from Buddhist ceremonies, and we can learn a lot from what Great Master Dogen tells us about impermanence, because our understanding of impermanence will give us a better view of the ceremony that we've just seen and participated in, and the ceremony that you're going to go away from here and look at your life and say, I want to make my life a ceremony. What can I do? So what Dogen has to say about impermanence is quite a lot, and I'm going to read you a couple of quotes. And this first one, you know, Dogen was very poetical. He was also very straightforward, and he didn't mince words. This is from a book called Ehe Dogen, Mystical Realist, by Heejin Kim, who was Korean by birth, studied in Japan and in California, and is currently professor emeritus at the University of Oregon. So that's pretty close. So what he quotes in here is, in a Chinese classic, it is said, I shall be content even to die in the evening if only I hear the way in the morning. And all of us have already heard the way. All of the verses in the hymns that we sang today point us along the way of the Buddha. He continues to say, if you do not seek enlightenment here and now, in what birth are you to attain it? So when Dogen talked about impermanence, it wasn't in any kind of, oh my God, I'm going to die. I might as well, what is there to do kind of thing. It was, I'm going to die. I need to make the very most of every moment that I have between now and that day. And Heejin King further quotes, at each moment, quotes Dogen, at each moment, do not rely upon tomorrow. Think of this day and this hour only, and of being faithful to the way while given a life even just for today, for the next moment is uncertain and unknown. So if we take Dogen's teaching to heart, then we want to ask ourselves, what is it that I need to do in my life? What is it I need to do in my life to use every moment that there is for the benefit of myself and for the benefit of all beings? So let's go back and look at ceremonial a little bit, because looking at ceremonial is going to help us to answer that question of what do I do right now in this very moment. And one of the things that ceremonial teaches us to do, because there you are with a number of people, there are chaplains and there are people in the Great Monks Offertory and there's an organist and a presenter and people opening doors and offering incense and doing all kinds of things. Well, one of the things that we do is to pay attention to what we do. You know, not just brushing aside, oh, I'm supposed to be here and do that, but really paying attention to what we do. And that's one of the things that we can do in our daily life, is to really pay attention to what we are doing. You know, I think the word for it, well, it's been in Buddhism for a long time, but also in the world, is mindfulness. Mindfulness, paying attention to what you're doing. And secondly, we want to pay attention to how we are doing something. Gee, that's the third time I picked up that glass and it slipped out of my hand. Well, is it the glass? Is it your hand? Or is it you're not paying attention to how you're doing that? I'll let you answer that. But anyway, we pay attention to what we do, and we pay attention to how we do it. Ceremony also allows us a broader view and a deeper perspective of what's going on, because we're not the only one there. And ceremony is a wonderful time, at least it has been for me, to let go of the need to get everything right, according to my standards, and the need to have everybody else get everything right, again, according to my standards, of course. So when I can come to a ceremony and say, what is this ceremony all about? What do the invocations, what do the hymns mean? And I can do what needs to be done, and if I'm part of the ceremony, I can pay attention to what I'm doing, and I can pay attention to what others are doing in the sense of, oh, I'm supposed to be following them, and I thought they were going to go that way, but they're going that way, so I'll go that way. That's where they're going. That's what I'm going to do. And so it expands our perspective behind this tiny meager little self that we think is the center of the universe, which isn't really. It also allows us to work harmoniously with others, because I really have to, it's really interesting at ceremonies. I've learned a lot in ceremonies, and I'll make a little aside that when I first came here, what seems like countless ago, but at least it's been many years ago, and I came to my first ceremony, and there were statues and bowing and incense, and I thought, I'm back in Catholic girls' school. This isn't what I thought I was coming to. I thought I was going to come to a Zen monastery, and I was going to look at a wall, and I was going to do manual work. So what's the ceremony business all about? So I had to let go of a lot of what my baggage was coming into that. And it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen just because of me. It happened because of Reverend Master Jiyu's teachings, because of the Dharma, and because what other monks have said to me and done for me. So being in a ceremony is not very much different, you know, than being in daily life. We have to pay attention to what others are doing without getting so involved in how it's being done that we forget what we're supposed to do. And that's been an interesting teaching in ceremony, because if someone makes a mistake, a quote, mistake in the form of the ceremony, I can find myself getting so involved in, well, what are they going to do now, or how could they do that? And then I'm standing there when I'm supposed to be moving someplace else. So here are two mistakes instead of one mistake, right? The other person's and mine, because I was attending more than I needed to the mistake of the other person. Another thing that happens in ceremonies is bowing. Now, I have reached the advanced old age and decrepitude where I'm not able most of the time to do full prostrations on the floor. And this has been and is a source of regret and sorrow for me, because when I came to the monastery and when I came to Buddhist practice, I could get down and do full prostrations and get up on my heels, the way one is, quote, supposed to do. It doesn't work that way anymore. And it's only been recently that I have been able to say to myself, Scholastica, you may be able to do that again sometime, or you may not. What's the important thing? The important thing here is to bow with my heart, and my body will do as much as it can do. There's a saying in Buddhism, as long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So if I can't get down on the floor and bow anymore, am I creating the demise of Buddhism? Well, no, I'm not all that important when you think about it. But at the same time, it's what's in your heart that makes a difference. And since I came to that realization not so very long ago, I realized that my bowels are as full of gratitude as when I used to be able to bow on the floor. And for me, that's what the saying, as long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. It's that gratitude in our heart, and it's offering up whatever we have for the greater good of the world, not just ourselves, but the greater good of the world. The other thing that we find in ceremony is stillness in activity and activity in stillness. I believe that I have either heard Reverend Master Jiyu say or read that she talked about ceremony as kind of coming from the cushion into daily life. I don't sit on a cushion anymore, so I think of it as kind of going from the bench to the street. And that we can be as still in the activity of a ceremony as we can be on our cushion. And we can use this opportunity of the activity. And there's a lot of activity in ceremonies. One of the things that always fascinates me is that when the monastics are dragoning, circumambulation, one group is going one way to the left and one group is going to the right. One group is going east and one group is going west. So we're not all going in the same direction. And it's a wonderful teaching for daily life because we're not all going in the same direction. But we are going to end up all at the same place. If we're born, if we're here, one of these days, we're going to be dead. The body is going to say, goodbye, that's it, I've had it, I'm going on, maybe. And so whether we're going in the same physical direction or not doesn't make any difference. But one of the things that we can do is look at everybody in whatever direction they're going in as Buddhas. And I think in this, shall I say, troubled world that we live in today, that's a real act of faith and trust to see everyone as a Buddha, at least to see everyone with the heart of a Buddha. This is what Reverend Master Chiyu talks about. And I would recommend to you Roar of the Tigris, Volume 1. We were fortunate to have it as a Donna book. So you won't find it in the shop to buy, but you will find it in the guest house to take with you. And please feel free to do that. Reverend Master Chiyu talks a lot in here about the life of the householder, the ceremony of daily life. And what she says is, and this is taken from lectures that she gave, so she's talking to people that are right there. And she says, today we are going to have a look at the first of the two great ways of putting all of this into practice, all of this ceremony, all of this teaching in daily life, the way of the householder. The Buddha taught, and Soto Zen maintains to this day, that both the way of the householder and the way of the monk, both are necessary and are complementary to one another. So to answer your question, and if it wasn't you that asked it, it was somebody else, do I have to become a monk to be enlightened? And the answer is no, dear, you don't. You can just stay in your ordinary daily life. Practice meditation. Let the precepts guide all of your thoughts and actions. And don't worry about whether you're enlightened or not. Just be content to lead an enlightened life. Now, Reverend Master Chiyu continues, what I will do over the next few hours is to look at various aspects of daily life with you and see how the ceremonies of Soto Zen can show you that what appears mundane is in reality sacred. And by the end of this, I hope that you will also see that the whole of life is a ceremony. The whole of life is dignified, worthy of respect, and religious in every aspect. Before I came to the Abbey to become a monk, I was certainly coming here as a lay person. And I lived up at North Cascades Buddhist Priory, had some property, a little travel trailer there, and I had several jobs. And I left at 5 in the morning, and I got home about 7 at night, fed the two cats, and collapsed. So I didn't do a lot of meditation. I wasn't able to get up and meditate before I left at 5 in the morning. And I was exhausted when I got. And I wasn't happy with that. So I took refuge in the monk that was there and in the monks here. And this was not out yet. Roar the Tigris, Volume 1 was not in print then. And I decided that my daily life had to be a ceremony. And I even wrote a little article for our newsletter called The Ceremony of Daily Life. So what did I do, you may ask? Very, very simple things. Outside of what I did in the morning, and I tried to read the precepts every day, but when I went to my car and put the key in the lock, I said the three homages. And when I got in the car, before I put the key in the ignition, I made gassho. And then I put the key in the ignition. And this continued throughout the day. You know, when I fed the two cats in the morning and the evening, Jazz and Pepper, some of you may even remember them. They came here later. I said the mealtime verse. I don't think they really noticed, but I noticed, and I said the mealtime verse for them. And when I brushed my teeth at night, I said the toothbrushing verse. And I did as much as I could to put ceremony in my daily life. And when the weekend came and I could sit more, I sat more. And I read the precepts every day. I made a little tiny booklet. This was a long time ago. They had savings accounts then. And you got a little booklet and it showed you how much you had in your savings account. So I took the cover off of it and I pasted the precepts in there. And when I had lunch at work, and we didn't have a cafeteria at the clinic that I worked in, and I would sit outside, I would eat my lunch. And after I ate my lunch, I would take my little book out of my pocket because it was very tiny. It didn't say precepts on it. It didn't say Buddhism on it. But I would open my book and read the precepts. I had a very nice green plant on my desk, and I found a little tiny 3-inch-tall statue of Kanzian, and I put it there in the potted plant. Of course, no one in the office paid any attention because people had potted plants all over and they had various kinds of things. And so I tried to do things that reminded me that the important thing in my life was my Buddhist practice. Even though I had to earn a living, being in grad school, you know, having a child, all of these things I had to attend to, but I wanted to be a Buddhist first. And later on, I found this wonderful quote by Reverend Master Daiswi, who is deceased now, but when he came here, he was I believe, a graduate student in psychology, and he wrote, this may be in Buddhism from Within, this may be in his book, and he said, when I came to the Abbey, I was a psychology student studying Buddhism. And later on, I became a Buddhist studying psychology. And that's what we want to do. And we can do this in our daily life. So the question is, what helps us besides ceremony? I think we have to be willing to change our habits of the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we behave, so that our everyday life reflects our true self. And our true self is a self of compassion and wisdom, our Buddha nature. So what helps us? Where are some guideposts that we can look to? One of the important, well, we have the precepts, and we have our meditation, and we have the Four Noble Truths. That's a lot of teaching. I wanted something a little bit easier to grasp and a little bit simpler to remind me in my daily life that I can think and speak and behave in a different way than what I've ever done before. I can, and I'm still working on this one, I can give up the critical mind. I can let go of the sarcastic remarks and the flip sense of humor. I can be more willing to look at people as the same as I am, no different than I am, regardless of their race, gender, ethnicity. You know, it's all out there now, right? But everyone wants to be happy, and no one wants to suffer. And people that do harm to other people, still within them, there is the Buddha nature. Reverend Master Jiyu said, if we could do better, we would. That's been helpful for me, and it's helpful when I look at the world around me. And when I look at the world around me, and I take a deep breath, and I realize that the world has been full of horror and harm and terror and violence and killing for thousands and thousands of years. It's not going to stop because I'm taking a vow or because I'm keeping the precepts or because I'm sitting on my cushion. Will it ever stop? I don't know. I hope so. But what I can do is I can change my daily life. I can change my life this very minute. So what's helpful to me? What's helpful to me are what Dogen called the signs of enlightenment, the four wisdoms: charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. And Reverend Master Jiyu in Roar the Tigress, Volume 1, talks about those in great detail. And some of the things that she says is, we have to look at charity as generosity, and we have to look deeply within ourselves if we're really going to know what generosity is. But for me, generosity will always be what Reverend Master Jiyu said the year I took the precepts, when she showed us her silk. She was on the altar. We were all down here. And she talked about generosity of spirit. And I had never heard that term before. This was back in 1986. And that term has never left me, because I know that when I'm not generous, when I'm not kind, I know that there is still within me a generosity of spirit, and that I can make up for that mistake. So the second of the four wisdoms, second sign of enlightenment, is tenderness. And again, you know, Dogen talks a lot about this. Reverend Master Jiyu talks a lot about this. And she talked about seeing others as ourselves. I think that's really hard to do, but I'm working on it. Seeing others as ourselves. In other words, what do I want out of life? I want to be comfortable. I want to not harm other beings. I want lots and lots of things. So does everybody else. So do all of us here. And we all have our own little agenda. And really and truly, what makes me think that my agenda is better than yours? Why can't I just say, can we not make all of us a success in what we do? And that doesn't mean that if someone is committing an act of violence against someone, and someone is committing harm, that we're going to say, oh, that's okay, you have your agenda, I have mine, yours is as good as mine. No, because Buddhist teaching teaches us not to harm others. So we have to look at things with the eye of a Buddha in order to see the heart of a Buddha. And what it means is, if you're making a big mistake that's going to harm other people, I'm not going to copy that. If there's an opportunity with a generous spirit to point that out to you, I will. Maybe there's nothing I can do about it. And it comes back to doing something about myself. The third of the four wisdoms is often termed benevolence. And benevolence is looking at wise ways of helping people. Wise ways of helping people. This may mean that what I think is a good way to help people may not be a good way. So I have to really sit still. I have to be firm in my meditation. I have to have the precepts right here, right inside. And then I look to my meditation, I look to the precepts, I look to the Dharma teaching, and I say, what is good to do here? What is good for me to do? And the fourth, not the last, but the fourth of the four wisdoms are sympathy. And Dogen says, if one can identify oneself with that which is not oneself. So that's the big thing. Can I look at you and accept you for what you are? You know, this is true of our family, of our children, of our employees, of our employers, that we just need to give people the benefit of the doubt. We need to recognize that everyone is doing the best they can. And I think outside of Reverend Master Ji's comment on generosity of spirit, that giving others the benefit of the doubt has been really, really helpful to me. Annie Dillard, in The Writing Life, says, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. How we spend our days is how we spend our lives. So don't wait for tomorrow, because we don't know whether tomorrow is going to come. Another saying, and I can't tell you where this one is from, the way we live is the way we're going to die. If we are full of resentment, anger, delusion, greed, that's what's going to accompany us on our deathbed. Is that what we want? Actually, it's not. It really isn't. When we die, regardless of how we die, we want to be able to open our hands and say thank you. And it's gratitude. It's saying thank you that Reverend Master Jiyu says is the fifth of the four wisdoms. Being grateful for what we have. We can only understand the four wisdoms and gratitude by looking within, by meditating, by trying to live the life of the precepts, by taking responsibility for what we think and what we do. So please take this weekend home with you, whether home is a long way away or home is Mount Shasta. Take this weekend of the Buddha's birth with you and recognize that we are all Buddha. We are all celebrating our birth as Buddhist. That we can practice the four wisdoms in our everyday life, and that we can practice gratitude. That we can find ways to practice gratitude. I recently came across a lovely little book by Oliver Sacks, Dr. Oliver Sacks. It's called Gratitude. And I thought, oh, so I checked this out of our local library and read the whole thing. It's 45 pages. It doesn't take long to read. But he said two things in here that I thought were very relevant to my Buddhist practice and hopefully relevant to your Buddhist practice. All of the five essays in here were written in the last 2 years of his life, and he had been diagnosed with melanoma of the eye 9 years before he wrote these, and that had metastasized to his liver. So he said, at 81, I felt I was in good health, but my luck has run out. A few weeks ago, I learned that I have multiple metastases in the liver. He said, I feel grateful that I have been granted 9 years of good health and productivity since the original diagnosis, but now I am face to face with dying. This is the sentence I thought was so relevant. It is up to me now to choose how to live the months that remain to me. And we don't have to have a diagnosis of cancer to realize that our life here is finite. You know, some of us have many years left. Some of us don't have so many. What do we want to do with the time that we have? He says, I have to live in the richest, deepest, most productive way I can. That's a choice for all of us. For me, it's a little easier because I have all the Buddhist teaching. I have meditation. I have the precepts. I have all the wonderful teaching of all the ancestors in Buddhism and of Reverend Master Jiyu. So it's a little easier for me. And I have to make the choice to do it day by day, minute by minute, being in the moment. He continues to say, I cannot pretend I am without fear, but my predominant feeling is one of gratitude. I have loved and been loved. I have been given much, and I have given something in return. After all, I have been a sentient being, a thinking animal on this beautiful planet, and that in itself has been an enormous privilege and adventure. So I thought, I don't know that he's ever read Dogen, but I thought, but that's what Dogen tells us. You know, we only have this one life. What did it say in Rules for Meditation that some of you recited the other day? This life is as transient as dew on the grass. Time flies as an arrow from a bow. We can be grateful for all of the opportunities that we have. We are here and we are human beings. So we are not only able to hear the Dharma, but we can offer the Dharma to everyone we meet. And it doesn't matter whether they're Buddhist or not. So take this weekend with you, and may you all be well and happy. Thank you for coming. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha.